the hospital, that they've hit a mosque, and that they've killed civilians.
That's Fox's Courtney Keeley near the front lines. Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Paid for by Stansberry & Associates Investment Research.
A very wealthy U.S. citizen is predicting that in 2011, we will witness the most important day in America in more than 50 years. He says it will change everything about our lives. The way you shop, travel, invest, educate your children, and even how you take care of your health and your own family. Now, this man has made some outrageous predictions over the years. The crazy part is, he's usually right. You see, he predicted the collapse of GM, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and America's biggest mall owner, General Growth Properties. In fact, Barron's called his work a dire prophecy. Recently, he created a video, which you can watch online for free, detailing his biggest and most important prediction yet, and it's a real eye-opener. I can't stress this enough. You should at least watch this free video online today. He explains everything you need to know, including simple steps you can take to protect yourself.
You can find the video at www.endofamerica44.com. That's endofamerica44.com. Watch the free video at www.endofamerica44.com. That's endofamerica44.com.
Sell-off going on Wall Street, even as oil prices drop. Fox Business Network's Lauren Simonetti here live.
Dave, the market is getting hit and hit hard, pressured by news here and overseas. The Dow is now down 196 points. The number of people filing for jobless benefits for the first time rose by 26,000 in the latest week, hitting 397,000. That is a reversal from the previous week when applications hit their lowest level in nearly 3 years. And the U.S. trade deficit widened amid that jump in oil prices, oil now hovering around $102 a barrel. Overseas, pressure tied to news that rating agencies Moody's downgraded the debt of Spain. Dave.
Now, Lauren, the price of gas is holding about steady. AAA puts self-serve regular $3.53 a gallon on average nationwide. That price doesn't matter a bit to these people. The Forbes list of billionaires.
For the second year in a row, Mexican telecom magnate Carlos Slim tops the list with a net worth of $74 billion, followed by Microsoft founder Bill Gates and investor Warren Buffett.
The total net worth of this list is $4.5 trillion, equal to the GDP of Germany, the entire German economy.
Editor-in-chief Steve Forbes, the number of billionaires continues to grow. It's now at 1,210, China nearly doubling its number of billionaires, the U.S. with the most, 413. Lisa Lacera, Fox News Radio.
For the first time in more than a half century, there's a new drug to treat lupus, an affliction where the body starts attacking itself.
The FDA has approved Benlysta, an injectable drug designed to relieve the flare-ups and pain caused by lupus. It's not a miracle drug. It only worked on 35% of the North American patients tested. Didn't help African Americans. Still, an estimated 200,000 U.S. patients could benefit.
That's Fox News Radio's Chris Stanley. They'll use a drug to treat a killer in Ohio this hour. Johnny Bastin will be the first person in the U.S. executed with a single drug, pentobarbital, which is normally a surgical sedative. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
WVOX and WVIP HD2. New Rochelle.
Our Thursday morning forecast for Westchester County and vicinity includes a flood watch in effect from the mid-morning hours right through Friday afternoon. That's because the amount of rainfall we're expecting between 2 and 3 inches of rain for later today and tonight will be heavy at times. Although it will be raining this morning as well, the heaviest rainfall arriving later today and tonight. And then we get into a slow, gradual improvement as the frontal system moves through. We get into a gradual clearing trend that should last into the weekend and into an early portion of next week. In the meantime, periods of rain today, highs in the mid-40s, could be heavy at times, afternoon and evening. For tonight, again, rain heavy at times, overnight lows 40 to 45. Rain tapers off on Friday morning, then becomes partly sunny, but still the chance of some showers in the afternoon or highs. Middle to upper 50s, probably earlier in the day, and trending colder with time. And on Friday night, mostly cloudy into the mid-30s. Saturday, although looking partly sunny, there is a chance of an afternoon rain shower. Temperatures near 50. Sunday, mostly sunny in the mid-50s. On Monday, sunshine, mid-40s, only in the 40s on Tuesday as well. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide, WVIP HD.
Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather is brought to you on WVOX Worldwide by Entergy and the Indian Point Energy Center, right for New York.
At Entergy, meeting our region's need for reliable, affordable, and clean electricity is an everyday success story. That's because our Indian Point Energy Center supplies up to 38% of the region's power needs. It also produces some of the least expensive power generated in the region. And most importantly, it does not produce greenhouse gas emissions. That's right, zero greenhouse gases. This plays a key role in helping this area improve its air quality. so it should come as no surprise that a growing number of environmentalists, including Dr. Patrick Moore, the co-founder of Greenpeace, say nuclear power is a vital tool in the fight against global warming. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.safesecurevital.com. Because the more you know, the more you realize that Indian Point's clean, reliable, and affordable energy is a big part of the climate change solution.
From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of Temple Israel of New Rochelle, Dr. Luigi Mealy, Ari Brown, and the Sound Shore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours.
We have ways of making you talk.
This is a crazy man.
WVOX Worldwide.
WVOX.
Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Levensold, your host for this series on the natural world, education, and culture. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, March 10th, 2011, the 80th day of winter. There are 10 days until spring. I told you it would come, and you have earned it. We've had a tough winter. We got through it in 10 days anyway. It is dangerous to write winter off before the third week of March. We have gained 3 minutes of daylight since yesterday, 38 minutes since last we met 2 weeks ago. The sun rose at 6:15 this morning. It will set at 5:56 this afternoon. We will have 11 hours and 3 minutes of daylight today. The moon rose at 8:41 this morning. It will set at 11:52 tonight. We are 2 days short of first quarter, and the next full moon is March 19th. Next high tides in New Rochelle at 2.06 p.m. In Yonkers at 12.40 in a couple hours from now. Dobbs Ferry, 12.22. And in Haverstraw at 1.04. Excuse me, at Haverstraw, 1.50 p.m. Now, our regular feature, the names, of American service members who have lost their lives at war. May they live on in all of our hearts. From the Air Force, Senior Airman Nicholas, Nicholas J. Alden, age 25, from Williamston, South Carolina. He was with the 48th Fighter Wing. Alden was killed when a man opened fire on a group of U.S. airmen on a bus at Frankfurt in Germany International Airport on March 2nd. The bus was transporting security forces to Ramstein Air Base for deployment to Afghanistan. Also killed in that incident was the bus driver, Airman First Class Zachary R. Cutterback, and he also died of gunshot wounds. Specialist Jason M. Weaver, age 22, of Anaheim, California. He was with the 42nd Military Police Brigade, killed when he was attacked by a roadside bomb in Kandahar Province, Afghanistan, on March 3rd. Corporal Jordan R. Stanton, age 20, of Rancho Santa Margarita, California, with the 2nd Marines, killed by a roadside bomb during combat in Helmand Province on March 4th. Staff Sergeant Mark C. Wells, age 31, of San Jose, California. He was with the 8th Theater Sustainment Command, killed by a roadside bomb again in Helmand Province on March 5th. Corporal Andrew Charles Wilfert, age 31, of Rosemont, Minnesota. He was with the 8th Military Police Brigade, killed by a roadside bomb in Kandahar on February 27th. I was with the 8th Transportation Battalion back in the NOM days. Specialist Brian Tabata, age 21, of Las Vegas, Nevada. He was a Screaming Eagle with the 101st Airborne, killed by small arms and rocket-propelled grenade fire in Kunar Province, February 27th. Sergeant Christopher J. Gould, age 25, of Saginaw, Michigan, with the 1st Infantry Division, killed by a roadside bomb in Ghazni Province, February 27th. Specialist Rudolph R. Hizon, age 22, of Los Angeles, California. He was with the 10th Mountain Division, roadside bomb in Logar Province, February 28th. Specialist Christopher G. Stark, age 22, of Monette, Missouri, 63rd Explosive Ordnance Disposal Battalion, one of two soldiers killed with a roadside bomb in Wardak Province on February 28th. The other soldier killed in that same incident was Staff Sergeant Chauncey R. Mays, age 25, of Cookeville, Texas, and he was with the same unit. Private First Class David R. Fahey, Jr., age 23, of Norwalk, Connecticut, right up the road here. He was with the 42nd Military Police Brigade, killed by a roadside bomb in Kandahar Province on February 28th. These 12 American servicemen were alive on the date of our last broadcast 2 weeks ago. There were no combat deaths in Iraq over this period, although there were three non-combat-related deaths. Never forget that thousands of American servicemen and women and our allies are at risk of their lives at this very moment. Many more will be killed. Many will be broken. Please keep them and their families in your hearts. And I do notice each week when I look at these names, there are English, Australian, French people who are also killed. So our hearts go out to the families and friends of our allies as well. Each death is a great loss to the families and to all Americans. May they live forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the near future, because there are no more deaths to report. Time for the Culture Corner, my reviews of plays, movies, opera, ballet, museums, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions, and you have the right to disagree with them, because everyone has the right to be wrong. Well, this will be a very short review today because I'd like to get to our guest. We did see Mandy Patinkin in the Public Theater's production of Compulsion. Just a word, Mandy Patinkin shows his extraordinary acting chops in this vehicle. The play features puppets as virtual characters, the most important one being Anne Frank. The play was not great, a little hard to watch. Patinkin was, however. For the full review, go to www.environmentallysound.org. The full review will be posted in a day or two. And also remember that all programs are archived there as well. Okay, my guest today is Sir Roger Penrose. He has the Order of Merit. He's a fellow of the Royal Society. There are 1,314 of them today. That's a pretty rare group. A noted theoretical physicist, mathematician, and philosopher. Currently Professor Emeritus of the Rouse Ball Chair, I hope I'm saying that right, at Oxford. He held that chair longer than anyone else, which I had to tell him yesterday. He didn't even know that. He held the chair for 26 years. He is now Emeritus Professor. He is active at the Mathematical Institute at the University of Oxford in England. He is especially known for advancing our knowledge of general relativity, cosmology, and thereby extends the work of Albert Einstein and, in fact, does so much more. He's in a class of his own. He and Stephen Hawking have worked together, disagreed much, written together, and they shared the 1988 Wolf Prize, which is an Israeli award recognizing achievements in the interest of mankind and friendly relations among peoples, irrespective of nationality, race, color, religion, sex, or political views. Speaking to us from Oxford, England, welcome Sir Roger Penrose.
Hello.
Good morning, Sir Roger. How are you today?
I'm fine.
And we're a little overcast looking for a bunch of rain later on. How's the weather in Oxford today?
Well, here, it's beautiful and sunny.
Oh, that's a switch. Generally, you're known as the foggy ones.
Well, it's lovely today.
That's cool. And it's also about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 3:15, right?
Correct.
Okay. Now, let's just start with one of the heaviest subjects that you deal with and that our listeners maybe mostly unfamiliar with. It's called the singularity, and this is when we go into a black hole, and probably other places you can enlighten us about that, all the laws of physics, math, and everything else that we know break down and no longer apply. We're going to take a break in about 3 minutes. Can you get us started on the singularity?
Well, it's a place, you know, in a black hole is a place where like a star or a collection of stars have collapsed inwards under their own gravitational attraction, and they reach a place where the gravitational force gets greater and greater, the densities get greater and greater and greater, and the curvatures of space-time, which measure the strength of gravity, that goes up to infinity. So according to our theoretical schemes, and this means Einstein's general theory of relativity, we reach a place where the equations just give up because things become infinite.
So,
and that's why we call it a singularity, because the place that you just you get stuck.
This must be very frustrating for a physicist and a mathematician who's accustomed to being able to figure everything and have everything fit neatly into a theory, or am I mistaken about that?
Well, it depends on your point of view. I mean, it's nice to, you see, actually to predict exactly what's going to happen is pretty difficult anyway. And you really need the most powerful computers that we have and so on. And even then, we don't get much of an idea. But to know something general, like the fact that the equations are going to give up at some point, is interesting, and that's something you can tell from just general mathematical results. So, no, I wouldn't say it's completely... I mean, it's fascinating in a way,
sure,
but it's also alarming because we don't expect our equations to give up like that.
So do you take refuge then in calculus and the concept of limits to where you know that you can only get just so far and then...
The limits, that's exactly... You have to use all those ideas already in the equations that tell you what to do, and it's just that our usual procedures just don't work. It's not just that the procedures don't work. We know the equations don't work, and that you're led into a situation where a new physics has to come in, and we don't know what happens.
And your
usual view is that we have to look at where Einstein's theory combines with the theory of quantum mechanics, and that's a challenge that nobody has resolved as yet.
And you are working on that?
Well, not in the usual way.
Okay.
I could elaborate if you want me to.
Well, do that in about 30 seconds, and then we'll come back after the break. Go ahead.
Okay. It's just that most people are looking for what would be called a quantum gravity theory, which means applying the standard rules of quantum mechanics to the structure of space-time, or to Einstein's theory. And what I think is that this is a place where the rules of quantum mechanics are going to go wrong, too. So the standard ideas of quantizing, that means applying the standard rules of quantum mechanics, just won't work when it comes to Einstein's theory. And we need something completely new where quantum mechanics itself has to be changed. And that's not the usual view, but that's my view.
Was this where Einstein posited his cosmological constant?
Well, it comes into what I want to say later, but it doesn't feature very much here. It doesn't make much difference.
Okay,
the cosmological constant makes very little difference to the singularities. So that's something we're stuck with, whether we have the constant or not.
Okay, so let me just sum up before we go to break. The singularity is where everything breaks down. We don't understand. In other words, if you were taking your mother to the movies and you entered the door, there'd be no movie there. There'd be something that we just don't understand. Okay, well, I think that's...
Well, we wouldn't even, you know, we...
we could
no,
do it. Okay.
Concept of what could happen. Well, our theories just tell us that everything blows up, everything...
So, Roger, we have to go to break. We will be right back.
Okay.
We will be right.
With business news at 20 minutes past the hour, every hour, here's the latest update from the Fox Business Network on WVOX Worldwide and WVIP HD2.
From the Fox Business Network, stocks sharply lower after the government reported a rise in unemployment claims and a jump in the trade deficit. The Dow seeing triple-digit losses just past 10 a.m. Eastern, down more than 200 points. Initial jobless claims rising last week as more Americans hit the unemployment line. The Labor Department says applications rose to a seasonally adjusted 397,000. The rise comes after applications fell to their lowest level in nearly 3 years the week before. And the trade deficit jumps more than 15% in January to $46.3 billion. It's the largest increase in 6 months. Though exports rose to an all-time high of 2.7%, imports surged more than 5%, led by higher oil prices. And General Motors announcing its chief financial officer, Chris Liddell, is going to step down effective April 1st. Liddell resigns after completing the largest public offering in history and stabilizing GM's financial operations. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Robert Gray.
Have you ever clicked the like button on a Facebook page to tell people you liked what it stood for? Apparently, a growing number of people of all political persuasions really like the idea of keeping decisions about your healthcare between you and your doctor and away from Washington insiders. To see our plan for making it happen, visit healthcarecompact.org. That's healthcarecompact.org. Log on today and help turn a Washington failure into an American success.
At home.
Kind of get you going in the morning.
At work.
It's on all day here.
In the car.
Every afternoon on the drive home.
We're everywhere you are.
Thank you for being there.
WVOX Worldwide.
WVOX.
We are back. We're speaking with Sir Roger Penrose, world famous, actually, physicist. Roger, we were just getting... Hang on, I'm having a little problem with this headphone. There we go. Okay. We were just speaking about the singularity, which we try to make people understand is when everything that we know or anticipate or can predict breaks down. You are especially well known for saying that there are objects in our visible universe which are from before the Big Bang. Now, the conventional wisdom is that before the Big Bang, there was just some little thing and it blew up and there was nothing before that. And you're identifying small temperature changes, and we're talking about, by temperature changes, we're talking near to absolute zero. And you say that these are indicative of something before the Big Bang in lay terms, because it's really difficult to understand this stuff. Try to make that clear for us.
Well, let me start by going back to the singularity question, because black holes are just one place where we expect to find these space-time singularities. The other place is in the Big Bang. So that's a place where, again, if you go back in time, you find densities get bigger, temperatures go up and up and up, and you get a place where our equations, in the normal way of things, just blow up, and we have no way of extending. So again, people tended to think we're going to need a new theory of quantum gravity or something in order to try and understand what happened at the Big Bang. Now, what's unusual, I mean, I've actually changed my mind to some degree about this question about 5 years ago, where I argue that the Big Bang was not actually the beginning of everything. The usual point of view is that you can't really even talk about what happened before the Big Bang, because the Big Bang was a singularity, and the singularity is a place, a singularity in space-time, where the very notions of space and time give up, and so we haven't even got a notion of time, and so we haven't even got a notion of what means before. You see. So people would say it's a meaningless question, which would be what I would have said too. But I've changed my mind on this, for a sort of good reason. There are many puzzles about the Big Bang. There's a lot more structure to it than you might think. One of the big puzzles is the great uniformity. The main evidence we have of the Big Bang is, I think, what you were just referring to a moment ago, is this radiation coming from all directions, which is referred to as the cosmic microwave background, or CMB. And this is radiation which is sometimes called the flash of the Big Bang itself, but cooled down because the universe is expanding and expanded enormously from this initial state. And when in its expansion, it cools down. So the temperature of this radiation is about 3 degrees above absolute zero, or 2.7 now, degrees.
Is there logic to the statement that as something expands out, it will cool?
Yes, that's the sort of thing you expect. Well, you see, the same amount of energy, if you like, is having to fill a much larger volume. And so therefore, it's a lower temperature. So there's less energy per unit volume.
However, the volume is a vacuum, is it not? Or are we talking about
the
black
volume of space
matter?
So this is going. Yes, you might think, what does that mean? Well, let's not go into that.
Okay.
The universe is getting bigger and bigger, so there's more room in it for the same amount of energy, and therefore it cools.
Okay, so you have defined that. Now, were you actually looking for? I'm just trying to get into your head a little bit. Were you frustrated by the fact that you could not think about anything before the Big Bang, and something in you wanted to, as something in me wants to think about before the Big Bang?
Well,
and then you
nice,
said, "Well,
yeah,
let
you
maybe
want,
maybe
like
that little ripple."
Things, like you might think there's something going on after you collapse into a black hole.
Right.
But I was at that time prepared to accept that, well, a singularity, the notions of time cease to mean anything. Yes, we want a theory to tell us what's going on,
right?
But the notion of what went before might not make any sense. So I was prepared to accept that. But what's changed is that I have a different view of this. And this basically comes from trying to understand the very curious structure that the Big Bang has. It's sort of very random from the point of view of all the matter that's there, and it's very unrandom from the point of view of gravitation. And this is the great puzzle, how it can be imbalanced in that very curious way. So it's trying to understand that was what drove me to the point of view I have now.
Well, did you discover these ripples, as you called them?
Oh, well, that's not me.
Oh, you didn't discover the ripples?
No, those ripples have been known for a long time. The discovery of the cosmic microwave background, it got the Nobel Prize twice. The initial discovery by Penzias and Wilson.
Okay, so somebody discovered these ripples.
Ripples were discovered later on. This was Smoot and Mather. They got the Nobel Prize again, much more recently, for looking at the details in the microwave background. And the details reveal an awful lot of information. You might think this great walloping explosion will just look like a walloping explosion, but actually there's an awful, incredible amount of detail in the very tiny variations in temperature. The temperature is extremely low, but it's not exactly constant over the whole sky. And there's a lot of information in that. And okay. The claim is that my claim is that information is telling us something about a previous, you might call it a previous universe. I prefer to call it a previous eon of our universe. See, what I'm calling our eon is the Big Bang. Starting from the Big Bang, the universe had this enormous expansion, and it's now accelerated in expansion. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and right out to infinity. That's our eon. And what I'm saying is that there was another eon like that which preceded our entire eon. And the very remote future of that previous eon somehow became the Big Bang of our eon. Now, that's a funny idea. How can something very big become something very small? But that's the idea you've got to get your mind around.
Well, yeah, that has to do, of course, with the fact that protons know no time or space, right?
Well, it's the photons, yes.
Yeah.
If you want to tell how big something is in relativity, it's roughly the same as telling how fast clocks run. So you can measure distances by telling you, but if you can measure times, you can measure distances because you can tell how far light will reach in that particular time. So if you say the speed of light is a given thing, then time measurements and space measurements are equivalent. Now, the thing is that to make a time measurement, we have wonderful clocks in physics. We have atomic clocks and nuclear clocks, and they're fantastically precise. But the precision of those clocks, or the fact they work at all, depends on mass. It depends on the fact that you have particles which have what's called rest mass. Like a proton or an electron or a neutron, they all have mass. But a photon, that's a particle of light, has zero mass.
Okay, Roger.
If you just have these photons running around, you can't make a clock out of them.
Okay, let me just cut you off. We're going to take another break. Please hold on, and we'll be right back to you. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you are listening in Amble by the Sea, Appletree Wick, UK, Arnie Boggs or Asloss, Scotland, Bachelor's Bump or Balls Green, UK, Bangor, Wales, Bangor, Maine, Oxford or Cambridge, UK, you have logged on to www.wvox.com. You're listening live and we will be right back.
With world and national news three times an hour, here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Ron Flatter. Muslims want to know why they're the only ones being scrutinized by a congressional hearing examining security threats.
This committee cannot live in denial, which is what some of us would do when they suggest that this hearing dilute its focus by investigating threats unrelated to Al-Qaeda.
Republican Peter King chairs the House Homeland Security Committee. One congressman says the hearing is stereotyping Muslims, recalling one who was a first responder who died during the 9/11 attacks in New York.
Some people spread false rumors and speculated that he was in league with the attackers because he was a Muslim.
Democratic Congressman Keith Ellison of Minnesota. Days of protest preceded this morning's hearing. The Wisconsin Assembly is expected today to do what the state Senate did last night, approve a plan to curtail union rights for most state workers. Republicans removed all the spending provisions. Fox News. We report, you decide.
Critter Comforts, Westchester's most beloved and respected pet store, is now in Mamaroneck. You remember Critter Comforts from Weaver Street in Scarsdale, where for many years they found loving owners for lovable puppies. Thousands of beautifully bred quality puppies. Before Critter Comforts, it was risky at best to buy an animal from any pet store. But for 18 years, Paula, the Critter Comforts owner, has earned a unique and enviable rep as the source for well-bred, adorable puppies. Maltese, Yorkies, Poodles, Golden Retrievers, Cockapoos, Cocker Spaniels, Beagles, and more, individually selected from the finest breeders in the nation. Visit the new Critter Comforts with your family and welcome Paula and her new collection of lovable pups to 822 Mamaroneck Avenue, near I-95 in the Hutch between Calico Corners and the Car Wash, across from the A&P. Now in Mamaroneck, Critter Comforts, the home of Paula's Puppies, also pet supplies and grooming. Open 7 days a week. For directions, call the new Critter Comforts at 914-472-5407. That's 472-5407, or on the web at crittercomfort.net.
Hi, this is Nora Murphy. You may know me from Nora's Neighbors here on WVOX. I'm here to let you know about an important charity dinner that will be held at the end of March. On March 31st, Hope Community Services, one of the best-known and respected charitable endeavors in Westchester, will hold its gala dinner at Beckwith Point Club in New Rochelle. Hope provides food to meet the critical needs of the growing number of hungry individuals and families right here in New Rochelle. That's what Hope Community Service does. We feed the poor and the hungry. This year's Hope Dinner on March 31st will honor Whitney Radio's president, William O'Shaughnessy, Father Francis Gasparic of the Capuchin Missions, Missy Palmisano, the founder of County Harvest, and Christine Moriarty of Holy Family Parish in New Rochelle. The Gala Hope Dinner is Thursday, March 31st at Beckwith. For more information, call Carol Trum, the Executive Director of Hope, at 914-636-4010. That's in New Rochelle, 636-4010. And save the date for an essential charitable endeavor that touches many lives close to home. That's the Hope Dinner on March 31st.
And now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
Our weather forecast for today, calling a flood watch in effect from 10 a.m. right through Friday afternoon. Periods of rain will be heavy at times this afternoon and tonight. Highs will range in the mid-40s. Periods of rain heavy at times tonight. Overnight lows in the lower 40s. Rain in the morning on Friday and then becoming partly sunny, but still the chance of a shower in the afternoon tomorrow. Our highs in the upper 50s, mostly cloudy at night, mid-30s. Then on Saturday, back to partial sunshine, chance of an afternoon rain shower. Our highs will range to near 50. Sunday's weather looking mostly sunny, mid-50s. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide and WVIP HD.
From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of Kevin Elliott, Jovan C. Richards, the New Rochelle Boys and Girls Club, and the Sound Shore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours.
This is America's great community radio station.
Really seems to be in touch with the heartbeat of the city.
AM 1460 WVOX.
We are back. Before we get back to Sir Roger Penrose, I'd like to just make an announcement. WVOX is having its annual St. Patrick's Day broadcast a week from today, March 17th. This year, we'll honor George Latimer and Cooper Caldwell. You're all invited. It is open. It's a wonderful time. We all hang out, and there's live music and many, many live interviews. It's a good way to connect with the WVOX staff. I will be there for sure. It's at Dudley's Parkview Restaurant at Hudson Park in New Rochelle. If you don't know where that is, either Google it or GPS it or something. It's right down by the rivers on Echo Bay near the Municipal Marina, if that helps you. If not, just Dudley's. Look them up and give us a call. Bill O'Shaughnessy, of course, our owner and mentor, sponsors this, and he will be there, and the rest of us will, including myself. So please join us again. That's next Thursday, St. Patrick's Day broadcast. There's always lots of good food, lots of good drink, and lots of interesting people to meet. Okay, Sir Roger Penrose, my guest, you are still with us, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, we're talking about in kind of different ways. We're talking about beginnings and ends. The conventional wisdom, and certainly what I was brought up to accept, is that the Big Bang was the first of anything. I never quite accepted that because I cannot accept limits. However, as far as beginnings and ends go, according to your theories in Eon, which is what we are in now, which is what, just to make it understandable to a listener, and Eon is our universe, and if there will be another Eon, that will be after this one is gone, and if there was one before, it was before our Big Bang, correct?
That's right.
Okay,
that's...
so is there a string of these eons? Are we just one in an infinite number of eons? How do you make this... Do something. Help me, Roger, please.
Well, I have no idea. I'm just speculating.
You're no help at all.
Eons join onto each other in this way. Whether they have a sort of trend and maybe they die out, or if they had an origin or anything like that, I'm not really making any claim about. I would try to argue that maybe they are, each one is more or less like ours. Not in detail like ours, but more or less like ours. And that just extends indefinitely in both directions.
But they would have giraffes in those other eons.
Well, there
cockroaches.
Could be giraffes. And they, well, we don't know. You'd have a trouble finding them, though.
But, you know, if you don't know, Roger, then nobody knows, right?
Well, nobody does know. I'm prepared to. But you see, what I'm, most people wouldn't even allow me to have my eon before this one, you see. That's the one that I'm claiming we would have some evidence of.
Yes, and that's where you are especially controversial. You say that there is evidence in these ripples of temperature. There is evidence of a previous Big Bang, or at least there is something that should be looked at as potentially evidence of a former eon or something before the Big Bang. Now, why are people so resistant to that? How can people...
Well, there's more than one reason. Let me first explain what I think we're looking at. You see... The ripples are things that might look like ripples on a pond. They would basically be these temperature variations in this background radiation. But where do they come from? You see, if you have a ripple on a pond, it's either because the wind's blowing, or what I'm thinking of is you might have raindrops, and a raindrop would produce a ripple which comes out. Now, where does that raindrop come from? See, what I'm saying is that what you're actually looking, the analog of the raindrop is... some absolutely stupendous event in the previous eon to ours. Now, you see, we live in a galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, and in the middle of our galaxy is a black hole which has a mass which is about 4 million times the mass of the sun. It's pretty big. But as these things go, it's not that huge. We, as far as we know, every galaxy, or pretty well every galaxy, has one of these black holes in its center. Now, every now and again, these black holes will run into each other. Now, you see, our galaxy, our Milky Way galaxy, is in a cluster which also contains another galaxy called the Andromeda Galaxy. And apparently, we're heading for it. So, at some day in the future, I reassure you, it's not very any time soon, we will collide with the Andromeda Galaxy. Now, it could be that the huge black hole in our center, the center of our galaxy, will encounter the huge black hole in the center of Andromeda, and when this happens, they will sort of first spiral around each other and eventually swallow each other up. Now, this kind of thing will happen from time to time, and when it happens, you have an absolutely stupendous burst of energy which will carry away the energy of, well, the annihilation of a huge proportion of a galaxy, more or less. So it's an absolutely whopping explosion. And this explosion would leave its mark on the join between one eon and the next. And that will be very faint. You'd just be able to detect it, is the idea. And the claim is that maybe we have just seen. These are the things that look like ripples in the pond. And maybe we have just seen these. This is the argument. Of course, a lot of people don't like to believe that because they have other theories about where these ripples come from. And so they take a lot of convincing. So it'll be an argument for quite a while to come, I'm sure.
But when Roger Penrose speaks, everybody listens.
Well, some people do.
Well, those who understand you listen. Okay, so now, if a new eon begins, may I say that a new eon typically or always begins with a Big Bang?
Oh, yes, that's right.
Okay.
It would always be a big bang. Yeah.
So when these two, when our black hole collides with or joins with the Andromeda's black hole, will that constitute a big bang? You said it would destroy much of a galaxy, but one galaxy is nothing. There's millions and billions.
The parts it's destroyed is already swallowed. You see, the thing will be swallowing stars all the time, and the one in Andromeda will be swallowing stars, and they'll get bigger and bigger. And there's a lot of energy stored in those black holes. Now, most of the time, that energy is just trapped. But if two of them encounter each other, then there will be a burst of energy, which is a substantial fraction, a few percent probably, of the energy contained in those black holes will come out in this great burst of energy.
So how about this? The two big black holes that meet each other and join, they have a baby galaxy, a black hole, a baby
but
black hole.
But it's not such a baby. It's actually bigger than the parents.
Wouldn't they
baby in the sense it's new. It's new, yes.
Oh, but it would be. Would it be more like a single organism from two organisms, or would it?
Yeah, it's the opposite of cell division, if you like. It's the black holes coming together and producing a bigger union of the two.
So they would not be destroyed. They would just be a huge, big black hole, which
that's right.
Which then releases a lot of energy. And why would it release energy and not swallow it?
Well, it swallows a lot, but there would be some in the. It's basically the energy of their motions. Well, it's a bit hard to describe. There is potential energy which can come out. It's not the whole energy. Whole energy can't come out. There's a limit on how much can come out in such a collision.
Okay, and how would this affect the eon then, if it's just local,
basically?
Well, it
doesn't have a huge effect on that. It's just that we can see it. The only effect it has that's interesting from my purposes is that it causes a little bit of a disturbance in this background radiation. So that's how we would see it from our perspective. We look back at this radiation, which is coming at us from all directions, and we have wonderful satellites that can measure this very, very tiny variations in the temperature. And from that data, which is an enormous amount of data, you could extract signals of this kind, if they're there. So as long as they're there, I'm claiming we ought to be able to see them.
Uh-huh. Does space-time move from when there is a Big Bang? There's not automatically a black hole. At what point does a black hole form? And I'm going to have to ask you that after the break.
Oh, okay. Sure. We'll come to that.
We will come to that. Okay, you're listening to WVOX AM 1460, New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening in Cairo, Egypt in Hamps, UK, Elephant Butte, New Mexico, Elmer's End in London, Embarrass, Wisconsin, or Enigma, Georgia. You have logged on to www.wvox.com, and you are listening live. If you, this is Bob Levinsohn, it's Environmentally Sound. My guest today is Sir Roger Penrose, noted physicist. We are speaking to him from Oxford, England, and we will be right back.
World and national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. Lawmakers in the House right now are looking at the radicalization of Muslims in America.
This hearing has drawn fierce reactions from the Muslim American community. Niyad Awad of the Council on American-Islamic Relations says it's premised on two falsities.
That American Muslims do not cooperate with law enforcement, and that 80 to 85% of their leadership are extremists.
But Chairman Peter King, a New York Republican, says there is no doubt that radicalization has affected the Muslim community.
Fox Radio's Mike Makowitz, 14 pirates in a Virginia courtroom indicted in an attack on an American yacht.
The two American couples were hijacked while sailing near the dangerous waters around the Horn of Africa. Shortly before U.S. Special Forces boarded that yacht, the four were mortally wounded.
Fox Radio's Jared Halpern and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton heading to Egypt and Tunisia next week. She plans to meet with Libyan opposition figures on the trip and here in the U.S. Fox News. We report, you decide.
Join your neighbors at WVOX's legendary, fun-filled annual St. Patrick's Day live broadcast on Thursday, March 17th. Once again, we'll be at Dudley's Parkview Restaurant, 94 Hudson Park Road. That's right off Pelham Road and across the street from Hudson Park in New Rochelle. Join Bill O'Shaughnessy and the WVOX staff and your friends in the community on Thursday, March 17th, noon to 5 p.m. for live interviews, tall tales, and tons of fun. It's a St. Patrick's Day celebration at Dudley's Parkview Restaurant, 94 Hudson Park Road, New Rochelle. A fabulous day, a fabulous place. St. Patrick's Day, live from Dudley's on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com.
When the boss starts stressing you out.
Can you remind me what I pay you people for?
Turn us up and drown him out. AM 1460 WVOX, New Rochelle, and WVOX Worldwide. WVOX.
Okay, we are back. We are speaking with Sir Roger Penrose, noted physicist and colleague and co-author with the also noted Stephen Hawking. We have about 10 minutes left, and in that 10 minutes, I promise you, you will understand everything about the universe because my guest is going to explain everything to you, and he is going to start by following up the question, does space-time move automatically from a Big Bang to a black hole? And when in the development of an eon does a black hole form?
Well, I'm not altogether sure people know this. I mean, certainly if you've got individual stars, some of them, the very big ones, when they've gone through their evolution, will collapse and form black holes. But these are pretty small black holes on the kind of level we're talking about. Maybe a lot of stars collect together inside a galaxy and then form a... When they run into each other, they get too massive, and then they will collapse and form black holes.
Oh, so that's...
In detail, okay. I don't know. I don't know whether there's a very clear theory about when these black holes begin. But we certainly know they're there in galaxies now. These are just irregularities in mass distribution, which might be individual stars and things like that, which collect together. Maybe they consist to some extent of dark matter, which is another mysterious component of the universe.
Right.
And these things will... clump together and produce black holes. Exactly when they come into being, I don't know that people have a very clear and ambiguous idea about this.
So it's
then when they're there, they start growing and they grow and they grow and they swallow other stars, and you get big ones in the sides of these concentrations of stars that we call galaxies.
So it's just like if there was an oil spill and then another truck ran into the oil spill and spilled its oil, it would just be such
it might be a bit like that, yes.
It'd be such a huge slick that anything that came near it would slide into it.
Yes, that's right. That's what happens.
So it's the accrued gravity of all of these stars that is just a monster attraction for everything else.
Yes, and once they start to collect, they swallow more and more. They tend to run out of fuel sometimes in the near vicinity of the center of the galaxy, and then they may be quiet for a while.
Uh-huh.
But they're potentially going to grow bigger, certainly when they run into other material, and certainly when another galaxy comes and collides into it, then they will start growing quite a bit. But these are local. They're very local phenomena. You see, you have little pinpricks in the whole the stretch of the universe. The universe is spread out, and you have little tiny places within this where you have these black holes. They're not a huge component of the mass distribution. They're substantial, but not where most of the mass is. But then these things will grow and occasionally run into each other, and when they do, they produce these great explosions of... Well, gravitational waves, they are. They're not ordinary forms of energy.
Okay, it is these explosions. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
When they run into each other, they
Okay, so but actually, in a case like that, the black hole gets bigger, and that explosion or that release of energy is what you believe you're detecting in these ripples.
But then they do eventually go away because of what's called Hawking evaporation. Stephen Hawking showed that black holes are not exactly black. They're practically zero temperature. They're very, very cold indeed. Mm-hmm. But as the universe expands, even the coldness of those black holes will be warmer than the radiation in the universe, which will have cooled down even more. And when that happens, the black holes start to radiate away energy. and then they eventually disappear. So that's a very remarkable conclusion, but that's what will apparently happen. It'll take something like what we call a Google years. That's 10, you know, one followed by 100 zeros. That length of time will be needed for the biggest black holes to disappear.
And you agree with Stephen Hawking on
this? I agree with that, sure.
Okay, so what happens in a black hole is it just gets so large, either through collision or attraction with other black holes or just from accretion of material, and eventually there's nothing else around it, which automatically gets colder.
That's
and
right.
As soon as it is lower in temperature, then the black hole has nothing to sustain itself. It just leaches out into the rest of the void.
Yes, it sort of leaches out in a sense. That's right. It's a subtle effect, but it will be very, very slow. The hole itself will take, the big ones will take something like a Google years.
Okay, well,
10 to the 100 years.
Well, we can just, we don't
before
care.
They disappear.
We don't care.
And then they
that.
Will disappear into nothing like, mainly just light, photons, little tiny massless particles.
Where does the next Big Bang come from?
Well, now there's the, there's where the idea, it takes a little bit of mind-bending. What you have to do is imagine that there's nothing left in the universe which can build a clock. See, if nothing has any mass, then it can't build a clock. If it can't build a clock, it doesn't know how big it is. It doesn't know space. It doesn't know the scale of space any more than it knows the scale of time.
Okay.
The sort of picture I would think of, and this is the best I can do, I don't know whether it conveys a good picture, but if you imagine a map of the universe on your computer screen,
okay,
and let's suppose it's a movie, so it's actually doing what the universe does, and you want to compensate for the expansion, because this universe is expanding and it's accelerating in its expansion. So you want to compensate for that by zooming out. So you reduce the scale of your picture at the same rate as the universe is expanding. And you're going to also have to speed it up at the same time so that the speed of light seems to remain the same. Now, you keep on doing that, and you find it settles down until nothing much happens. And that's infinity.
Okay.
That's the end, as okay. far as you can consider it. But it's sort of the whole universe is squashed down into a finite map.
Okay.
Now, we do the same thing to the Big Bang, but the other way around. So go back into the Big Bang. You've got a movie of that now.
Okay.
And I want to, now I'm zooming in.
Right.
So that I'm stretching it out, stretching it out, stretching it out, and you get to a point where nothing much happens. And there you find the energies, the temperatures of everything is so huge that the masses of particles become irrelevant, and again, they become massless, and they can't measure time.
Okay.
So they don't know how big they are either.
Okay.
So it's a sort of Alzheimer's disease of the universe. Like the universe forgets how big it is, and it's as good as being a small Big Bang. Now, that's a funny idea to get your mind around. So you've got to have a lot of mathematical equations.
There's very little I can get my mind around in this conversation, but I'm trying to stay with you.
Yeah. But that's the picture.
So, okay, I see the picture, though. So why does that result in how does a Big Bang come out of that? It's just quiet,
well,
nothing.
The main point is it comes out in the way we see it, because there's this huge mystery, which nobody can explain, really, in any other way, as far as I know.
So it is what it is, in other words.
Which is the way why the universe is so special in a very special way. It's special because gravity hasn't been activated. And this is a big puzzle. It has to be special anyway because of what we call the second law of thermodynamics, which tells us that things get more random as time goes on. But it's... That means that at the beginning, it has to have been a very special state. But then you say it's a walloping explosion. How can that be a special state? Well, it's special because the gravity was somehow not activated. And the picture which makes sense of that is the one I've just been describing.
Okay.
I mean, to explain why it does will be a bit difficult. But
well, I can see the picture that nothing is happening. There are protons which have no time or space or anything like that. I'm just still wondering what causes all of that to result in a Big Bang.
In a Big Bang. Well, you need your equations there.
Oh.
It has to do... There would be two possible ways of reading it, you see. It could be that it just keeps on expanding and then it sort of collapses again. But that way of reading it would disagree with the second law of thermodynamics. The second law of thermodynamics tells you things get more and more random as time goes on. And if it collapsed, the second law would run the other way around. And so that isn't what we have. We have a second law which keeps going the way we see it.
Well, I believe that the second law says that the differences in temperature, pressure, and chemical potential equilibrate in an isolated physical system, something like
yes,
that, right?
Yes, well, that's right. But when you have gravity, see, that's what I am about gravity. You might expect that things would form a kind of gas which was in equilibrium, and that's the maximum entropy state. But if there's gravity around, it clumps. And when the entropy goes up, you get more and more clumping. And that's what's happened since the Big Bang. But to explain why the Big Bang didn't have that clumping, you need a picture like the one I've been giving, that somehow the universe gets stretched out and then forgets how big it is, and then it's the Big Bang of the next eon. Funny idea, yes. The equations make sense of it.
Well, okay, but that's beyond us.
I won't try and explain that.
Well, my colleague has just suggested that we publish a book called Big Bang for Dummies. Do you have that series in England, Books for Dummies?
I think I know what you mean, but I'm not familiar with them really, yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's just it's simplified primers of various
yes.
complex subjects. So maybe that will be your next book. Actually, why don't you tell us about your next book, which has just been published in England and not yet in the United States?
Oh, well, this is about describing this theory, yes. It's called Cycles of Time, and it's subtitled An Extraordinary New View of the Universe. And this is this idea about the eons and so on. And there's an appendix in it with the equations, but there's all the serious equations are in the appendix.
Are there any,
you don't need to have all that stuff.
Are there any pictures?
I hope.
Are there any pictures in the book?
Oh, lots of pictures.
Oh, cool. I got to get it.
Pictures, absolutely.
So, Roger, it's been a great pleasure. I don't want to ask you something that we have to cut off because we are running short of time. But I wish you tremendous success, obviously. And I'd like to have you back on sometime if you would be willing to do that.
Well, it's been a great pleasure.
Okay, Roger.
Thank you very much.
Sir Roger Penrose, thank you very much from Oxford, England.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. I would like to thank Sir Roger Penrose for joining us on Environmentally Sound today. It is always fascinating to me when humans stretch their knowledge and demonstrate how war and greed and all those other awful things don't have to be the sole raison d'être of our species. Too many humans are wrapped up in making money and being cruel and thoughtless and critical and hateful. I myself sometimes fall into that little black hole, but I try to avoid it. So refreshing to know and speak with a man like Sir Roger, whose calling is to think and reflect and demonstrate the best that humans have to offer. We are, in fact, an extraordinary species. Unfortunately, we don't really make the most of it. Our thought for the week, don't tell people dying for freedom in the Arab world that they're not ready for it. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community radio station, the flagship of Whitney Radio and the best small station in the USA. Next up, straight shooting, rootin' tootin', Howard Sturman. I am Bob Levensold, chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. Enjoy the music. You are here, and it is now. Health and happiness to you all.